We come to the end of our series here on the seven deadly sins this morning and holy virtues with perhaps the most obvious and self-evident of the seven deadly sins in anger or wrath. When someone is angry or wrathful, generally everyone else around them knows about it. Anger and wrath don't stay inside us very long. Years ago, back in the truck garage where I worked night shift after high school, there was another mechanic who would regularly fly off the handle, never one to hide his anger, or maybe perhaps he couldn't hide his anger. So word would get passed throughout the garage early in the evening, stay away from Chuck tonight. He must have had a bad day. Maybe he didn't sleep well during the day or something set him off. Stay away from him. So we keep our distance, try to talk to him as little as possible. Didn't want to stir him up. Chuck had a nickname the other mechanics in the garage gave him, Chuckles. It didn't help the situation. No one wants to be known as an angry young person or an angry old person, for that matter. When someone comes off with an angry outburst, there's often an apology. Sorry, I lost it. Because anger is sort of this out of control feeling, this emotion that gets the better of us that, well, when we're angry, we're dangerous, we're unpredictable, we're a threat to those around us. It's no wonder then that Jesus has these hard words in the Sermon on the Mount about anger, where Jesus essentially equates anger and murder. The two are synonymous, at least in terms of judgment and punishment. The one who is angry, the one who insults another person is liable or is in danger of the same judgment as the one who commits murder. And unfortunately today, in our world, we have tragically connected the two when weapons and easy guns and ammunition are so prevalent. The connection between anger and murder we see in the news all over the place, and it happens all over the place. Whether you're driving in the car, there's road rage, somebody gets cut off, and if there's a weapon, watch out. It happens in homes when spouses argue and there are weapons involved. It happens even in backyard picnics. It happens in workplaces. It happens even, sadly to say, as we know in our own community, in churches. Anger can easily lead to murder. And so it's easy for us to recognize in its extreme form anger and wrath and murder. We don't need much convincing to see the danger that this in many ways is the deadliest of the seven deadly sins. We know by experience that we individually, collectively, are at our worst when we're angry. And if we look at ourselves hard enough, we look inside ourselves at the anger that we all carry, we kind of know when we cross the line, when our anger wells up inside us, when it's not at all redemptive and restorative, but it's focused on bitterness and being resentful and vengeful and wanting to hit back someone harder than we've been hit. And yet we could nuance our anger a bit. In his call to worship, Richard used the language of righteous fury, holy wrath, we might call it. We could nuance our anger because we've been created with emotion, the full range of emotion, by an emotional God, a God who is passionate and caring and jealous and feels for people. Our emotions as humans created in God's image will swing the gamut from joy to sadness, from love to anger. And in Jesus' ministry, we even get some glimpses of anger, maybe holy wrath, we could say. But wrath, nevertheless, after Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, Where does Jesus go first? But into the temple, taking a whip in hand, entering the holy sanctuary, driving out the religious folk. Jesus turning over tables, telling people to get out of here. And later in the week, Jesus has a long series of woes against those same religious folk, the church leaders of his day, the scribes and the Pharisees, those who thought they were righteous and good and missed the big picture of God's love. They were excluding people from God's presence. They had passed along heavy burdens to folks, making access to God a financial transaction. And Jesus is angry at the injustice, this abuse of power, righteous anger. Maybe in contrast, sometimes we don't have enough righteous anger. We are maybe reserved. We prioritize moderation and maybe even stoicism. We keep it all inside. But God, throughout the Bible, we see this full range of emotion, even in God. God gets upset and angry in the face of disobedience. God displays love, gratitude, thanksgiving. And we see all these emotions reflected as well in the Psalms: joy and thanksgiving, gratitude, pain, lament, doubt, and even anger. And there is that one Psalm, 137, that we dare never to read in church because it's so horrific. But it's open, honest anger when these people of Israel feel some great injustice. They feel like they've been victimized by a national bully coming against them, that they want to do violent things to children. But they weren't acted on. And yet that anger is expressed here in the Psalm 137 in the context of a community that can bear the anger. One college staff person tells a story that on campus, after several sexual assaults, hundreds of students gathered on the campus in front of the chapel, and at a given signal, they screamed loudly. It was a screaming held as an appropriate way to vent their rage and anger, to remind them not to become complacent and settled in the face of injustice and horrible pain. Is it possible that we as a church can hear the anger and find appropriate and healthy ways to let that anger out in the context of God and community? Martin Luther, the 16th century reformer, talking about anger, mentions that anger has motivated him to some of his best work. And he writes, "I never work better than when I'm inspired by anger. When I'm angry, I can write, I can pray, I can preach well, for my whole temperature is quickened, my understanding is sharpened, and all mundane vexations and temptations depart." Anger. Maybe more of us need to be motivated by righteous anger to help us take action, to get angry with the things that God is angry with, so that we might witness more to God's love and God's welcome than God's grace that goes out to everyone in the world, in a world of violence and injustice. And yet, there is a danger in anger. When anger continues to push us toward retaliation, when it festers within inside of us, when it impacts our relationships at home or in the workplace or in the community, when it causes us to avoid others and isolate ourselves, it crosses a line. In some ways, by warning us about anger, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount is saying, we really can't be trusted with our anger. We can't always deal well with our anger. The engine that may motivate us and drive us to accomplish certain things can also bring out the worst in us, can also bring out the destructive worst in ourselves and our relationships with others. Our Christian heritage reminds us through the scriptures that vengeance is mine, God says, that vengeance belongs to God, that judgment, the final, ultimate end of judgment belongs with God. And we are invited, friends, to recognize limits of our anger, where anger does cross the line, and maybe to find ways to bring our anger into the community of God's people in the church, to work discerning how helpfully and healthily we can process our anger and witness to the injustices that give rise to our anger, and then find ways to give it back to God. Amen.